from KCPW in Salt Lake City. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. In 2009, the state issued a report called Facts About Women in Utah. And in the report, it notes that before 1990, Utah women showed a higher rate of college graduation than the national average. But by 2000, Utah women had lost their bachelor's degree or higher educational edge. So, what happened in the 90s? Was it tied to the economy, or was there a shift in cultural values toward women getting that diploma? A statewide task force has been studying those questions and unveiled its recommendations to reverse the trend yesterday. Today on the program, we're talking about why women in Utah aren't finishing college. Plus, the latest offering by Pygmalion Productions, 7. All that and your calls after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. According to a state report, Utah has the largest gap in the nation between men and women graduating from college, 6 percentage points. The next highest gap is in New Jersey at 2.7%, while the national average is just 1.3 percentage points. So what's going on here, and how can the state reverse the trend encouraging more women to get that diploma? Joining me now to talk about women and college and why all of us should care, Susan Madsen. She's a professor of management in the Woodbury School of Business at Utah Valley University. She was the project director of the Utah Women's Education Project. And Professor Madsen, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks.
Also with us, Bonnie Jean Beasley, co-chair of the Utah Women's College Task Force, and she is the vice chair of the State Board of Regents, where she's served since 2003. Bonnie Jean, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Later on in the program, 7, a documentary play about the struggle for human rights that's opening in Salt Lake City this week. But first, women in college. Did you attend college? Did you graduate? And why do you think more Utah women drop out before graduation day? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We'll get to the particulars of your recommendations in just a bit on how to remedy this problem, but I want to give listeners just a bit of context. What is going on here, what the problem is. So in 1990, Utah women had a higher rate of college education than the national average, but all of that changed by the year 2000. So what happened during that decade? Do we know some of the factors that led to where we are today in terms of women graduating from college? Susan Madsen?
Yeah, just a little bit of background about the statistics that you quoted. Generally speaking, we were above the national average when it comes to women being enrolled in college. We've always had a gap, though, in the state between the graduation rates of men and women. But through even back to the pioneer days, we had, when you looked at the population of women, we had a larger percentage of women who were enrolled in college and even graduating back then as well. Hmm. So we are not sure when we look at the decrease exactly what has happened. We do have more minorities in the state, which affects it somewhat, but we've actually compared ourselves to other states that have some of the same kinds of things happening in their population with immigrants and so forth, and we still have fallen behind.
Hmm. The underlying question here is, why should we care? Why should men and women care about women on college campuses, care about women finishing college? Bonnie Jean?
There are really two reasons that we ought to care. One is that even for those women who intend to be homemakers and mothers, higher education has significant benefits for them. And for those who intend to be homemakers and mothers, we have found that the reality is in Utah, life happens, and most of them will be working. Over 75% of the women in Utah who have children in school work, and over half of the women who have preschool children work. So whether you're choosing a career that's going to be in the workplace, where we know education is critical, or you're choosing a career to be a homemaker and mother, you benefit from higher education.
Professor Matheson, you've been studying this issue for years. What was the red flag for you? What drew your attention to this field of work?
Well, we knew, I've always been interested in how women develop themselves, particularly into high leadership roles, and found that the college experience in my leadership research was so important for young women. But one of the things that I wanted to make sure and mention, when we did the research on women in education in the state of Utah, one of the things that we found very strongly in the state was that young women did not truly understand, and probably those who influenced them, the full benefits of higher education. In our research, we could hear them say, through typing and writing, we could hear them say, well, I'm not planning on working. So college is about getting a job. And we found that most of the young women in Utah get that piece. But what they don't understand is what Regent Beasley just said, is that there are so many other benefits to being educated, whether you ever work for money outside the home. Twice as many educated people work in the community, donate blood, really get involved in the community. More educated women are more healthy, and they do better at parenting their children when it relates to helping them read earlier in life, preparing them for math skills and so forth. The list of, just even thinking better and understanding things better. And one of the key things, I think, is that most of us really believe that lifelong learning is important, right? What is very clear is it happens somewhat at an associate degree, but when you get to that bachelor's degree, people that go through bachelor's programs particularly or more, then for the rest of their life are much more open to learning continuously.
Bonnie Jean Beasley, you're nodding your head.
Well, I agree. We have seen that there are so many benefits. It's a benefit to the woman herself. She has greater self-esteem. She has greater ability to be self-reliant. She has better thinking skills, critical thinking skills, interpersonal skills. And so from an individual standpoint, it's really good for her. It's good for her family. As Susan mentioned, the children are better off physically in terms of health and well-being. They're better off intellectually. They do better in school. They're more likely to complete college themselves. They have a qualitatively different life. Then you go to the community. The woman is a benefit to the community. Now, she's the one who's out volunteering. She's the one who's taking leadership positions. She's the one getting involved in the political process. She's one who can understand how public policies not only affect her and her family, but will affect others who aren't like her, who don't think like she does, because she's been given some of those critical thinking skills and some of the context in which she lives in her culture and in her time. That's different than when we talk about job training. And when Susan talks about that additional 2 years of college, getting that bachelor's degree, we're talking about a quality of life differential for the woman, her family, for her community. And even though we usually talk about it in economic terms, these are other quality of life terms, and they also reflect economically as well. The economy's better.
Bonnie Jean Beasley, she's co-chair of the Utah Women's College Task Force, also vice chair of the State Board of Regents. Also with us, Professor Susan Matheson with the Woodbury School of Business at Utah Valley University. We're talking about women in college and why women are lagging behind in actually graduating. If you have personal experience here, we'd love to hear your stories. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Why aren't more women finishing college here in the state? So this issue has raised to the level of catching the attention of the governor. Governor Herbert sets up a task force to sort of look at this issue from all angles. What was your mandate? What was your charge, Bonnie Jean Beasley?
Well, the Utah Women's College Task Force was formed by the governor in the context of the governor's big goal. That is, by the year 2020, 66% of Utahns ages 20 to 64 will have a post-secondary degree or certificate. Now, in looking at raising the overall level of attainment for the state, and by the way, we're about 40%, there are some specific gaps, one of which was identified as the women's attainment. We have currently about a 6 percentage point gap between the attainment of bachelor's degrees in women and men in the state of Utah. That's why the governor established this task force.
Susan, did you have anything to add about your charge? You know, what was the goal here in studying this issue?
I think a number of goals. First, to really help raise awareness in the state by inviting really key stakeholders. And we had wonderful people that served on the task force. Another one was really to get them engaged, you know, opinion leaders throughout the state and influential Utahns to really start advocating for this. You need to, when you do this kind of social change, you need to raise awareness at the top levels, but also at the ground levels. And we've been working on that as well, doing lots of speaking to high school counselors and parents and so forth. But also, we wanted the charge of this task force included to really get conversations with campuses and other organizations like nonprofits to really start thinking about what do we do next? How can we collaborate? How can we get energy and momentum? So you have to have all the key stakeholders in this task force were some very prominent church leaders from various churches as well, because that's an important group. And then also to really the charge was to recommend, and we have 10 main recommendations to recommend, how do we move forward? Not just so people hear about it, but so the state of Utah can experience change. And the change we're talking about is what Bonnie Jean just mentioned. But the change is to get more young women and more women in general, older women back to college, and then staying in college long enough to get those certificates and degrees.
Well, we'll get to the specific recommendations in a bit, but I want to bring our listeners into the conversation. Again, talking about women in college, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's go to Alexandra from West Point, Utah. Alexandra, hi.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Okay, I think that having been a student, I grew up in Utah, and I currently attend the University of Utah, and I did go away to college when I first started. I think that one of the things that I saw differently in the state of Utah versus maybe like the state of Texas where I went to school originally was that we start our families really young here. I noticed that, you know, we get married a lot younger in the state of Utah, sometimes right out of high school. And then you have children, and, you know, I had my son at 23, and so it is harder to finish your degree and have a child at home. And then, you know, your husband works, and so I think that one thing is, you know, is making sure that even once you have a child, that you still find the drive to continue.
Alexandra, did you stick it out? Did you get that degree?
I am still working on my bachelor's degree. I have 28 hours till graduation, and, you know, it's taken me 5 years instead of the 4 that I would have wanted to do it in, but I think that, you know, like you guys were talking about earlier, we don't necessarily want jobs just because we have degrees, and that's kind of my position because my husband's in the military, so we travel, so it's kind of hard for me to think of having a, like, career because of my husband's job. But I really think that my having an education has enriched my family because I'm more eager to get my 4-year-old to start reading now as opposed to waiting till he's a first grader and allowing just the school to, you know, take on that responsibility.
Alexandra, thanks very much for sharing that story. I appreciate it. 801-355-8255. Dr. Madsen, you want to comment on Alexandra's points?
Yeah, that was a great story. I've heard many of those, but unfortunately, more stories that I hear are those that have dropped out. I'm so proud of her for hanging in there. But one of the key findings that we had in the research study we did throughout the state was that many young women in Utah, and what I call it is they don't see a life of integration. So really in their minds, they don't think ahead enough to say, okay, I'm going to be in college. They're not thinking as much about graduation, but they're not thinking once they get married or have that first kid. So what is their plan? And without having that conversation, what happens most of the time is what we found in our research is that they then drop out. instead of thinking, well, maybe I can have this child and maybe I can take a distance class or maybe I can go to an evening class. But instead, what we found was that many of them just drop out at that point.
It's that either I have that family and go down this road or I, finish the education, but you can't coexist. You can't do both, Bonnie Jean.
Right. One of the key findings, I think, that we come away from this task force is that we really need to attack this at two levels. One is an attitudinal level, an aspiration level on the part of the young women. They have to see a benefit for them and want to finish, want to have this degree. To view it instead of, I'm going to get married and have this child and drop out, I'm going to, for the benefit of my child, I'm going to finish instead of a duty to drop out. It's more of a duty to finish. And then the second part is once that aspirational attitude is there, that we help provide more flexibility for women to finish, that we look at these really practical helps, daycare, flexible classes, the distance things, the types of things that Professor Madsen just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. A key thing real quick that we found is that most of our samples said, I want to go to college, that's my goal. But they were not thinking of graduation. And so the change of aspirations really needs not to just get them to say, I'm going to go to college after high school, but let's go and then let's graduate and let's get those degrees and certificates.
Yeah. Please.
There's one other aspect to changing the aspirational level of the young women. That is, we also need to change the understanding of those around them who will be their support groups. If their husbands don't see a benefit, that will be very difficult, or their parents or others in that support network, because it becomes more difficult, as Alexandra said, and it will take more than just the young woman to do this.
We're speaking about women in college here in Utah. Bonnie Jean Beasley is co-chair of the Utah Women's College Task Force, which presented its recommendations to Governor Herbert yesterday. She's also vice chair of the State Board of Regents. Also with us, Dr. Susan Madsen, professor of management at Utah Valley University. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. What would have helped keep you in college if you dropped out or didn't even try? Tell us why. 801-355-TALK is the number. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Many women in Utah go to college, but most don't graduate. According to 2009 data, nearly 32% of Utah men earn college degrees, compared with just 25% of women. That's below the national average. So what can be done to get more women on campus, as well as make it to graduation day? Today on the program, we're talking about the problem, as well as a set of recommendations submitted to the governor yesterday. Joining us this hour, Susan Madsen, professor of management in the Woodbury School of Business at Utah Valley University. Also with us, Bonnie Jean Beasley, co-chair of the Utah Women's College Task Force and vice chair of the State Board of Regents. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. Why do you think women in Utah are lagging behind in the college graduation department? Are you planning to go back to school and to graduate? If so, tell us why. 801-355-8255 or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Let's go back to the phones. And Melissa is with us from Salt Lake City. Melissa, hi.
Hello. I was just wondering if they ever considered integrating any sort of family planning recommendations into these recommendations. I know that's kind of a sensitive topic, but maybe if we could train women about their fertility and maybe help them wait until they're done with college to start families, that would help them graduate.
Okay, Melissa, interesting question. Thanks very much for the call. Bonnie G. Measley?
Thank you very much for that question. I think that's an important one that some people have on their minds. we felt very strongly in the task force about not trying to prescribe to people what their values or what ought to their priorities ought to be. It was to help everyone recognize that whatever the woman chooses, that higher education is a benefit for her. There are many in our community of various faiths or cultures for whom motherhood is very, very important. And this is not an effort in any way to undermine the various values that people have in our community, but to rather support them and support women who make the choices to be homemakers and mothers, and those who are working with them to understand the importance of higher education to them.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Mattson?
Yeah, in our sample, we actually had people that never went to college at all, people that had one or two semesters and dropped out, and many that graduated from college. And interestingly enough, we had quite a few young women who had graduated from college that had children during the process. But what we discovered when we studied the aspirations that Bonnie Jane had talked about is that when they came into college, they were either raised or in homes or had high school counselors or teachers that were so influential that they had this greater desire and commitment to stay with it. So they were still able to get married, have children, but they still they knew, you know, some options that they could continue to have to get done. But it is a little bit more we recognize that. I did my doctoral work with four children between 3 and 11, so I understand that. But again, we believe that if we can raise the aspirations of young women, then they go to college, and still with those things that happen in life, good things, and sometimes other challenges, that they will stay committed and hopefully have the, what did you call that, Bonnie Jean, the support system to continue.
One of the recommendations is to create a college-going culture. So I guess by implication, that means that we don't have a college-going culture right now. There are improvements that we can make, Bonnie Jean Beasley.
There are improvements that we need to make. In the past, I think that was true. We had those original pioneers who entered the valley in 1847, and in 1850 they founded the University of Deseret. That was pretty audacious when they were living in wagon beds and dugouts and were in extreme poverty. So there was a strong sense of education is important. We seem to have faltered a little in that in the last while, and we've actually seen a decrease. We recognize that the world has changed. It used to be that you could have a self-sustaining occupation without a college. That's not true anymore. In general, you really need to have at least an associate's level or a highly skilled trade in order to be self-sufficient. We have this big goal of 66 by 2020. If our state doesn't come up with trained, highly trained and educated citizenry, we won't be able to have high quality jobs. They will go elsewhere. Other nations are already at 60%. We're down at 40. We need to make a serious shift in our attitude in the state of Utah.
The culture question does lead to, as many issues do, to the LDS Church, and you know, with over 60% of Utahns belonging to that faith, it does bring up what the role of the LDS Church is in all of this. You know, I understand that many church leaders have advised their congregants to get an education, and yet there seems to be a disconnect there. So what are leaders saying? What is the broader attitude? How do you change culture?
We've actually, in our research, again, we did very in-depth research throughout the state. We had a whole series of questions to really understand the religious, cultural kinds of questions to figure out what we should do. What we discovered with the LDS young women is that they did, particularly those that were very active. In fact, this might surprise you, Jennifer, but in our sample, the most active, particularly in the LDS Church, were those who were graduating from college. it was really the middle of the road or the less active that were not graduating from college. But what was clear was that they are hearing from their top church leaders that they should go to college. They should continue to learn. But when we dug in to figure out, so what is the disconnect, there's some cultural issues, and it's different than doctrine. The doctrine of the LDS Church is very clear that education is important. But in practice, sometimes young women may be advised, or they're just kind of feel like that's the way they're raised, that they should drop out after they get married because marriage is top priority. The problem that we found is that education for many then doesn't slide to second. It actually drops all the way off their priority list.
Hmm.
And so there's really a disconnect. Again, what Regent Beasley said is important, that we found some of these young women felt like they're being, maybe they've been encouraged, they felt like it's their duty when they have this first child to drop out. And again, I mean, when you look at the big, you know, how it's so important to be prepared economically as well in other ways, we really want to change that message. And I believe personally that that is aligned with what the LDS Church teaches, that it really is a woman's duty to be prepared economically to support the family if she chooses or needs to do so. But also, the LDS Church teaches that you should develop yourself as much as you can to really reach for your potential. And there is evidence in the literature that higher education helps you do just that.
We're talking with Dr. Susan Madsen from Utah Valley University, also Bonnie Jean Beasley, Vice Chair of the State Board of Regents. And we're talking about some recommendations given to the governor yesterday by the Utah Women's College Task Force. If you'd like to join us, we're talking about women in college and why Utah is lagging behind in graduation rates. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We touched on the culture factor. And you seem to be, in the recommendations, attacking this from many different angles. One is, you know, a huge public relations campaign, getting the voices of leaders in schools, churches, neighborhoods involved in this media blitz or whatever you want to call it. You also recommend hiring more school counselors to point students toward college. How big of a problem is that, Bonnie Jean Beasley?
Counseling is really important. It helps women get in the door, but it will help them finish. We're finding, as you've mentioned, that one of the issues is that they're getting married and they're having a child and they're dropping out before they're finished. Well, if they can move forward in an expeditious way, that will help them. If they have good counseling and they are able to make choices and follow it, then instead of graduating in 5 and 6 years, you're down to 3 and 4 years, especially if they can do some of their work when they're in high school. One of the important things that a high school counselor can do is help them take advantage of that senior year. I'll tell you about just one initiative that would help young women particularly, and that is if they will use their senior year of high school and get a year of college in, and one way they can do that is through general education concurrent enrollment with proper counseling. They use that, then they're through in 3 years in college, and then they're not dropping out.
And one of the things that, and many people know this already, that we really struggle, you know, we don't have as many funds in education, public education and higher education that many states do. But one of the things we have is above the normal ratio of student to counselor. So we have limited counselors in our high schools, in our middle schools, and even elementary schools. When we compare to other states, we have limited. And what that means is that we have one counselor to about 360 young people. What we found in our research was that it was really the proactive students, the students that were more on college track, that went into their offices and took their time, which is great. That's a great thing. But because they had so many students each, it's hard for them to find the time to go out and pull those students into the office, and that's what we found. Not all men or women, girls or boys, are going to be proactive. Mm. And so what this recommendation is to really do a pilot test to get some really trained guidance counselors in specific schools that really focus specifically on the college. All counselors know a bunch about that, but we'd really like to see, you know, a particular counselor in each school that really has more in-depth answers.
We're speaking with Susan Madsen from the Utah Valley University, also Bonnie Jean Beasley with the State Board of Regents. They were both part of the Utah Women's College Task Force and presented recommendations to the governor yesterday. 801-355-TALK is our number. Let's go back to the phones. And Cheryl is joining us from Salt Lake City. Cheryl, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I am great. So I was listening to your program this morning, and I just wanted to share with you guys what is some of my personal experience. So I'm actually a fifth-generation Mormon. I was raised LDS. However, I actually chose to not be part of any religion when I turned 17. So the point I'm making is that I do agree with what you were saying earlier, that I do remember being taught at a young age that education is important and we should be able to utilize our resources and become educated and help the world. But also, something that they also told us is that we should have children at a young age and we should put everything else on hold in order to raise these children. I'm 24. I have no kids. I'm single. I live alone. I am a student at Davis Applied Technology College in Kaysville, Utah. I'm actually the only girl in the welding technology program. So basically, I want to say that what you've said so far rings true to me. What's happening in my life right now, in addition to that, is my dad has always been the person who's taken care of our family. I have four younger siblings, and three of them are still teenagers in high school. Just recently, the IRS has come down on him majorly. They recently just took all of their computers. They took his iPhone, and they were making, like, friends and copies of everything. Just because they want to see what kind of assets they have before they basically, like, totally just give him hell. So my mom is scared. She's totally scared to death because she has no college degree because he's always been the one who supported us. He has a master's in business technology. Oh, actually, it's international business technology from San Diego State. So he's always been the one to take care of us. So she's been a paraprofessional for Washington County School District, and they actually recently cut her hours, so she's part-time, so all of us lost our health and dental insurance, and basically, you know, she's scared to death because she has no degree, and my dad might be serving jail time, and she has, like, no real kind of degree to help us support our family, so
sure.
I'm trying to do everything I can. I work as a dog groomer. I'm making, like, less than $12,000 a year right now, so I'm actually filling out a need-based scholarship application for my school today.
Well, Cheryl, thank you very much for sharing that story, and good luck to you as you go on this adventure of education. Cheryl brought up a number of points, one of which is, you know, her mother has to step up to supplement the family income, but also how she's in a program where she is the only woman. And I think your recommendations outline several mentoring programs to let, you know, women know that they're not alone out there. How important is the mentoring program to the success of keeping women in school? Susan Madsen.
The task force really felt strongly. In fact, we had three committees that worked independently or in connection with the task force, and each of them recommended that mentoring was important. So that is one of the 10 recommendations to go forward. There are some great smaller mentoring programs that we've heard about throughout the state, but they're really focused on specific populations or smaller groups. But the stories we're hearing are phenomenal on the impact that they can have. And I know the literature on mentoring, and that's helpful. So what the task force feels like is if we have really a resource of different kinds of mentoring programs for young women, and these can be used for young men too, of different ages, and particularly into the college age and the high school age. That there are so many business people. I speak with a lot of female business leaders who want to be involved and want to be connected. So we're seeing lots of people that want to be connected to helping young women, and many young women who have those needs. And there's not a good structure. In bits there are, but not a good comprehensive structure to really recommend connecting these people. And one-on-one, I'll tell you, a mentor can make a difference. In my research, and I call these transformational moments, these women would say, you know, I went and talked to this teacher. This teacher came up to me once and told me how good I was at this and this and said, are you planning on going to college and what field are you going? And you should be in science because you're so gifted. And they would say, you know, in those moments, that would change the way they thought of themselves. And they knew that someone had confidence in them. Sometimes, I mean, the parents are important, but sometimes it's good to hear that from someone else. And it would change them.
Our time is very short. I want to sneak in one last call from Dolly. Dolly from Salt Lake City. Hi.
Hi.
Very quickly.
Okay. My thought is, we're going to the dentist. I did. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Go right ahead.
Okay, my statement, I guess, is that you might not be considering the broader culture. I did drop out of school when I had my first child and didn't continue my college, but I did continue my education. I've since become fluent in Spanish. I've become a real estate owner. I've learned how to remodel houses by myself and learn how to supplement my family's income in other ways while I can still stay home and take care of my kids, and I still have gained more education. So college isn't the only way, and I think that for a lot of us, that has become kind of a foundation of our culture, is that I don't have to go sit in a college class to educate myself. I can study on my own, learn on my own, and use the skills that I was given in high school and the college that I did get in to better myself, my community, and my family.
Okay. Dolly, thank you for that call. Very quickly again, Bonnie Jean, can you address some of those concerns that you don't have to have the degree to keep learning? Does everyone need a college degree?
She makes a wonderful point in that lifelong learning is not confined to a classroom, that hopefully each one of us will continue to learn and grow and view our lives as opportunities to grow and develop ourselves. There are benefits to having completed the degree, particularly if you enter into the workforce. There are a number of opportunities for jobs where unless you have that completion degree, you just don't get a chance. The door is shut. It opens doors for you. There's a level of success and achievement and self-confidence that comes from actually having completed the degree. It means something. It represents that you have a particular level and quality of education in whatever field it was that you chose, and that you also developed a certain level of critical thinking skills and broad education in the general education sense. So yes, we encourage all people, men and women, to develop themselves and continue on in lifelong learning, but continue also to get your degree.
We're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, Bonnie Jean Beasley, co-chair of the Utah Women's College Task Force, vice chair of the State Board of Regents. And Bonnie Jean, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Susan Madsen, professor of management in the Woodbury School of Business at Utah Valley University, also project director of the Utah Women's Education Project. And Professor Madsen, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
And we'll have links on our website to the recommendations that were given to the governor yesterday, kcpw.org. Up next, domination, resilience, themes in the documentary play 7. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. Stories of sex trafficking, violence, and other abuses form the backbone of Seven, a stage adaptation of the accounts of seven human rights activists as told by seven playwrights. Pygmalion Productions presents its version of this groundbreaking work, and joining me now to talk about this particular show, Lane Richens. He's the director of Pygmalion Theater Company's Seven. He directed The Sunshine Boys for Pinnacle Acting Company, and he's currently working on a rendition of Neil Simon's Chapter 2 at the Wasatch Theater Company. Lane Richens joins me in studio. Lane, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Toni Lugo. She plays the role of Mukhtar Mai, a Pakistani woman fighting the tribal traditions that often use sexual abuse to punish women in Seven. And Toni, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Teresa Sanderson, a board member of the Pygmalion Theater Company. She is also a cast member in this production of Seven, Annabella De Leon. And Teresa Sanderson, thanks to you for your time.
Uh-huh, thank you.
Pygmalion Productions Seven is opening tomorrow, runs through March 10th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center here in Salt Lake City. More information is on our website, kcpw.org. If you plan on going to see Seven, if you've seen it in another city, tell us why. Tell us your impressions. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Lane Richens, Seven has been called documentary theater. What does that mean to be a documentary play?
Boy, well, you know, it's pretty literal that seven playwrights were assigned under a project they were working on through a group called Vital Voices in 2006 to interview seven different women who have gone through great adversity in their lives and gone back to their places of origin to create great change. And then transcribed those interviews and then got together and took those words and put them into a sort of loose narrative that became the play.
Hmm. How were you introduced to the production? What were your first impressions when you read or saw Seven for the first time?
I'd been following the story of one of the women in the show, Mukhtar Mai, who Toni plays over here, and since about 2003. And without going too in depth, the story itself captivated me for many years, and she ended up resurfacing in April of last year when her captives were released, their sentences were commuted. And reading about her story took me to the Vital Voices website, which led me to this play. I read it that afternoon and really couldn't stop thinking about it for about a week.
Hmm. Seven opened in New York City. Was it 2008?
Eight, I believe.
Since then, it's been staged throughout the world. Is this the first performance in Utah?
Yeah, in fact, I think, if my research is correct, this is the first fully staged performance of this in the world as part of a main stage theater production.
Oh.
It's written to be a reading, and I don't believe it's been fully staged in the way that we've imagined it.
Hmm. Lane Richens, director of Pygmalion Theater Company's Seven, which opens tomorrow, runs through March 10th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. As Lane mentioned, Toni Lugo, you play the role of a woman named Mukhtar Mai.
Yes.
Who is she? Describe her for us.
She is a powerful woman. She's defined everything that she's brought up to know. You know, she's turned around from something that she's grown up being raped or, you know, just been taken off the streets. And, you know, I'll describe that in the show later for you. But she takes that strength. Instead of letting it step on her, she takes that and turns it into power and really defines her name, which is powerful. Mm. And she turns it around and she really shows both boys and girls that this is what needs to happen. We are all citizens and we need to know.
I'd like to read one of the passages from the stage production of Seven. This is her introduction to her situation that leads into some really horrifying experiences for her. But this is her before she hits that wall. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could read this, and then we can talk about it.
My great aunt had the honor of naming all the children in the family. She called me Mukhtar, which means powerful or self-respecting. And that always was strange for me because I am very thin. And in my culture, a thin person is considered weak. My village is Mirwala, in the southern part of Pakistan, one of the poorest areas in the Punjab. We are from the Gujars, a peasant tribe of low caste. Like other girls, I played with dolls and climbed trees. But all daughters must learn special jobs so that we will be useful in the family. I was taught to do embroidery. People brought fabric to me, and I would design and sew their shirts and trousers. I also grew flowers and plants, and that is still something I love to do. Last year, I planted some jasmine and started some fruit trees too, but the goats came. They ate up all the mango and lemon trees, and so I replanted them. But the goats came again and again. They did not know that I am just as stubborn as they are. Whatever they do, I'm going to keep on with the planting. And one day, I think, the goats will just give up and my trees will have the victory.
That's Tony Lugo reading from the play Seven. Mukhtar Mai is the role, and you can see that she's a very happy mm-hmm. individual, one full of life and humor. And then she hits this horrible incident where she's actually gang raped in her native Pakistan, and it's a turning point for her. She's brought before a judge. What does she say, Tony Lugo?
She's brought before a judge.
You don't need to read it, but I'm just curious, you know, she's, how does she find her voice? What empowers her, do you think?
I think she's given a check, you know, and she takes it more as a bribe, and she doesn't understand, what do I do with money? You know, what do I do with money? And then she feels something. Hmm. You know, God comes through her, and she realizes, you know, I know what I have to do. I know what I can use the money for. I can build a school. And so that's how I can use the money. But this is how I'm going to get my word across in this school. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to teach these kids. And so she used the money to build that school, but she didn't understand what the money was for.
Teresa Sanderson, you play a character named Anabella De Leon. She's an outspoken leader who was elected to the Guatemalan Congress in the mid-90s. And I guess I pose the same question to you. Where does this woman get her strength, do you think?
You know, I think sometimes there's so much strength in adversity, and we don't always think about that. And some people choose to take that adversity and crumble, and some people choose to stand on top of it and somehow fight and make their life better. And that's what I think Anabella chose. She came from the lowest low in terms of poverty and just made a promise to herself that through education she was going to pull herself out of it, and did, went on to practice law, and then, of course, became a congresswoman, and has been instrumental in really changing women's programs in Guatemala.
And through the dialogue, she's really a force of nature.
I mean, she's a force of nature, this woman.
She has a voice and yeah. a strong voice.
Yes, it's one of the things I really love about her. She's also a singer and a performer, so she has this very theatrical nature about her, and she isn't afraid to just confront whatever it is and say it however. She doesn't care. She's just going to say it. She refuses to stay silent, and she really fights for it, and I really admire that kind of strength.
Mm. Lane Richens, many of the stories in here are very sobering, death threats, abuse, violence. Is there a ray of hope at all in this show? It's not all bleak.
Well, here's the thing that we've approached this show from the beginning. It's not about tragedy or hardship. It's about the strength, the empowerment that's gained through going through that adversity. This show is full of light and hope. It's about the buoyancy of hope. You know, it's how we keep afloat under the worst kinds of hardship.
These women have done incredible things with their lives, and I think it's really easy to find that.
And is that what you hope the audience takes away from that? Not these really heart-wrenching tales of abuse, but that people can rise above.
It. Yes, I think so. Yeah. That's
they're
what
gonna
I'm hoping
come out,
for.
They're going to come out wondering what they can do next.
Lane Richens, director of Pygmalion Theater Company 7, which opens tomorrow, runs through March 10th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. And Lane, thanks very much for your time today.
Sure, appreciate it.
Tony Lugo in the role of Mukhtar Mai, and thanks to you. And Teresa Sanderson, who plays Annabella de Leon.
Thank you.
And again, you can find more details and ticket information on our website, kcpw.org. City Views is a production of KCPW News in Salt Lake City. Thanks to Tamara Kemsley and Katie Sheen Abbott. Our technical director is Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. Next time, we're talking about street medicine and how advocates in Utah are bringing health care to the homeless. Join us for that conversation tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.